Okay, good morning. Welcome back to our Shmir Salashon class. We're learning really right now Erev Purim. So let us start with the Tfila Al Hadibur, please. In the beginning, Ribono Shel Olam, Yiratzon Lechanecha, Rachum Lechanan, Shetizakeni Hayim, Lechol Yom Lishmar Piyu, Lishanim Milashen Hara, Rechilas, Ezar, Mildabar Fila Al Ishi Achid, Vakol Shekain Akla Yisrael, O Achir Ephraim, Vakol Shekain Mil Yisraim, Amidosav Shel Akosh Barachu, Ezar, Mildabar Divre Shaker, Chanu from Achol Kaska, Askaiva, Unas Rarim, Halbanas Panim, Eisanus, Lechol Dugbar Asr, Lizakeni Shel Dabar, Kim Dabar Hatzari, Chaninani Gufi Vinafshi, our learning, and also with your permission, is this chus for Shlomo for Bracha Vigail. So we are on page 134, please. We're up to Sheker. That's where I have remarks. We're up to Sheker. Okay, Sheker, Kamod Zichtiv. So we're going through the introduction to this parak, to this chapter, is Basar Dvarim Elu Tzarech Lizaher, Kishahu Rotza Ledaber. With these 10 matters, I'm just reading from the introduction on the previous page, so everybody knows what we're talking about. With these 10 matters, you need to be on guard when you want to speak. So every time you want to speak, you have to run through this checklist of 10 things to see if what you're about to say falls into one of these categories. Ula Yesh B'dibra Achad Mehem, maybe in what you're about to say, there's one of these 10 forbidden categories, and if so, refrain from speaking. So the first one was Lashon Hara, right? And the second one was, and we spoke about this last time, Misraim al Midosav Shel Kol Shbaruch Hu Chas V'Sham, he whose speech is a complaint, Misraim, from the root word Ra, who speaks badly, so to speak, God forbid, against the Midos, the attributes and the ways of the Almighty. Next, oh, that was part of Aleph, actually, it was Lashon Hara against fellow man, Lashon Hara Kaviyachal against God, Beis was Rechilos, Gimel, Rav to Gimel, Sheker. Okay, so Sheker, Kamo Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says in Parashat Mishpatim, Divrei Midvar Sheker, Tirchak, from words of falsehood, you should stay far away. And we do know that there are times when a person is permitted to speak an untruth. Shina B'davim Pnei Hashem, Rashi tells us when the brothers, after they buried Yaakov Avinu in Parshas Vayechi, so they say to Yosef, Father said you should forgive us after he dies, never said that, so what are they saying? Are they lying? So Rashi says, Shina B'davim Pnei Hashem, they changed the matter because of truth. You know, the Ribbon Shalom, who is the Malami Torah, the Amma Yisrael, teaches us this very idea, Perikid Ches of Bereshis. So Sarah says, Aniza Kandi, I am old, and when Hashem goes to Avram, and he says, what did Sarah say? No, I'm sorry. Sarah said, Adoni Zakein. And Hashem said to Avram, I said it backwards, I'm sorry, that Sarah said that she herself is old. So we do see that Mipnei Hashem, once again, the ultimate Mo'amei Terel, Mo'amei Swal, Shina Badavra, Baba General, Sheker, Kamo Dichtiv, Midvar Sheker, Tirchak. You learn that out from the very words by yourself. One of my kids actually brought this home from school, Midvar Sheker, Tirchak. Doesn't say you should never say a lie. It says you should stay away from Sheker. We should be far from Sheker. But there are times when Sheker is perhaps necessary. But proper in your mammon, interesting. Over so especially when it comes to monetary issues, unfortunately, one just needs to read the news and see how many people are brought down because of lies associated with money and denial leads to stealing, leads to theft. And how much more so to one who stands up in Beis Din and testifies falsely. Over you should not bear a false witness against your friend. Good morning. So you see that even in this small paragraph regarding Sheker, there's three different laven brought down in Midrash Sheker Tirchak. First of all, lo tichachashu ish b'amiso and lo sana b'recha eid Sheker. So you see there are a number of different laven involved with Sheker. A person has to be very careful as to what comes out of their mouth. So since I read this piece in Hani Machlis, actually, I'm going to start with the Gemara. Whenever I talk about Sheker or read about Sheker, it reminds me very strongly of a teaching brought down in Hani Machlis, but we should begin with the Gemara. So the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubos, it's actually Tazayin Amud Beis, right at the end of Tazayin Amud Beis 16b. Tanan Rabbanan, Lifnei Hakala. Tanan Rabbanan, Ketzim Rakim Lifnei Hakala. So I think we may have discussed this in this class. Perhaps you remember. Ketzim Rakim Lifnei Hakala, how do you dance before the bride? So Beis Shammai Elmin, Beis Shammai is much stricter. Much more rigorous. Beis Shammai is the letter of the law. So what does Beis Shammai say? How do you dance before the kala? Who remembers? Kala kamo shehi, however she is. That's how you dance in front of the bride. Beis Hillel, oh, me, what is Beis Hillel? Hey, you should know because that's the song. What does Beis Hillel say? Hillel was much more No chalin va'aluvin, says the Gemara. He was foregoing, he was forgiving, he was more in the spirit of the law, not only the letter law. So Beis Hillel says, kala na v'chasuda. She's a kala, she's not, she's pleasant, she's chasuda, she has a thread of chasid going through her, she's charming. So Beis Hillel, Shammai says, however she is, that's what you should say. So listen what the Gemara says. Armu lahem Beis Shammai the Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai said to Beis Hillel, hareisha ha'isa chigeres osuma, omim la kala na v'chasuda, if she's blind. If she is lame, are you going to say kalana v'chasuda? But Torah amra midvar sheker tirchak. But the Torah says you should stay away from falsehood. So in other words, Beis Shammai says, are you following the Torah? You're not following the Torah. The Torah says midvar sheker tirchak. So if she is lame and she is blind, how can you say what a beautiful bride? You're lying. So amru lahem Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai lidivrehem mishal akach mikach ram in a shuk. According to your word, someone bought a bad purchase in the shuk. Okay, it's not today's day and age. We have Costco and Bed Bath and Beyond. You can't make a return. It's final sale. We brought home. There's nothing you should do. Yishabchenu beinav yiganenu beinav. So what should he do? Should he make the purchase more worthy in the owner's eyes or denigrate it in his eyes? What should he do? You should try and encourage him. You bought a good purchase. It's very nice. The rug will look nice in your bedroom, even if it doesn't match in the living room. Don't be frustrated. It has a use. It's good. So Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, you're going to praise it in his eyes. You're going to mock it in his eyes. Certainly you will.
Praise it.
You'll praise it in his eyes. So the Chachamim learn from the statement of Beis Hillel, a person's mind should always be mingled, should be pleasant, should be compatible with people. Okay? You don't have to be the kanal who tells them the rug is awful and how could you buy it, but they already feel bad enough about it. Right? So, one second.
Micha? So, let's say something is wrong. Like, Beis Shammai wouldn't say that, he wouldn't say Lashon Hara and say, not a nice thing and say you're ugly. He just wouldn't say anything.
Beis Shammai might say nothing?
Saying,
okay, but sometimes shtika koda, meaning you don't say anything, so they
say,
understand you hate their rug.
Just say mazel tov, have a wonderful life.
Okay. One second. The footnote here says, which is what we're speaking about, is a general principle that the maintenance of harmony and peaceful relations overrides the problem of speaking of falsehood. Is that the one? This rule refers to a case in which nothing will be gained by pointing out a problem with the purchase. There's an obvious defect the buyer must not have minded when he bought it. If the flaw was concealed and the buyer was cheated, listen, then you're obligated to advise him of the defect if he can recover, if it is possible for possible for him to recover his money. And listen to this. This is exactly what you asked and I answered without knowing that it's Tosfos. Being silent or offering very limited praise is an implied insult. You just asked that. And I said, shtika koda. Being silent or offering very limited praise is an implied insult. Although it is a lie to say she's beautiful, the importance of harmony overrides this concern. Ritva. Alternatively, kalana v'chasuda. You're not only talking about her externality and her physical beauty, if she's blind, if she's lame. Rather, you're talking about her chesed, her beautiful deeds. And therefore, one should always act towards a person in the manner in which the particular person prefers, Rashi. And since the bride evidently found favor in the groom's eyes, you are allowed to praise her, even though to you, you think it is sheker. So that really answers your question. Mm-hmm. So I always think of Hani Machlis's Allah HaShalom interpretation of Chasin and Emes. And when I teach this, people have difficulty with it. So I'm not telling you, I don't want to... Just go listen. Henny Sor teaching. This was in the grave box, which means it's her words verbatim. People think truth reflects reality and sheker, falsehood, does not reflect reality. For let's say, for example, at noon. If I say, Henny said it's night, that's sheker, right? It's noon. It's 12 o'clock. Now, Henny would come say it's night time, then you would think, well, either you think she's crazy or you think she's lying. But from the Meraglim, the spies that Moshe sent to spy with them, we learn a different lesson, okay? The Meraglim said, the lamb flows with milk and honey, Ephes, but. And they continue with a negative report. So Rashi says, who remembers what Rashi says? Does anyone remember what Rashi says? The spies first say it's a good land, then they say, but, and then they say it's a bad land. Why do they bother saying it's a good land? Kol davar sheker, wrote down the exact lashon of Rashi, she'ein omrim bo ksas emes b'tchila, so ein miskayem b'sofer. Kol davar sheker, she'ein omrim bo ksas emes b'tchila, so any words of falsehood. You don't say a little bit of truth, what will happen? It won't be upheld. No one's going to believe you. You're a blatant liar all the time, and everything you're saying sheker, no one believes. So put in a little bit of emes, then they know you're saying something emes. Okay, so far we're okay? But, honey, it's a good question. What was their sheker? Did the spies actually say sheker?
No.
They reported what they saw in the land. So how could Rashi say, called our sheker, she'ein omrim bo ktsas emes b'schila, so ein o miskayim b'sofa. There was no sheker. And he said it's fortified, the people are strong, the cities are very great, there are giants, Amaleks in the south. Moshe told them, see the cities, see the people, see the land. They bring back the fruits are enormous. What was the sheker? Do you understand the question? Mm-hmm. It's a very good question. Was there a negative report, sheker, or was it negative? It's not the same. This is the answer. It's very deep. Keep in mind the Gemara and the footnotes that I just quoted from Art School. Hashem, so to speak, changed the Lashon of Sarah. The Shvatim changed the Lashon of Yaakov Avinu, Shinam, Vidav, and Bnei Hashem. This is the answer. It's a little bit hard for us to understand this. It's so different from how we think of Emes and Sheker. But this is Hani's definition, based on Parsha Shlach and the Meraglim. When you say something Hashem wants you to say, it's Emes. When you say something Hashem doesn't want you to say, even if it reflects reality, that's Sheker. Now, the reason you get into trouble with this is because where do you draw the line between what Hashem wants me to say and what Hashem doesn't want me to say? Let's say you say to someone, you're fat, you're ugly, you're mean. Hashem doesn't want you to say those things. That's sheker. In other words, that's not just mean. That's sheker. Because the person you're speaking to is holy, special, unique, just like the kala. Kala na v'chasuda. You're talking about the chesed and the kindness within her, not only her physical traits. So what you're saying is sheker, even if you think it's reality. So if you say to the bride, she's beautiful, even if she's not a beautiful bride, Hashem wants you to say that. So you're actually saying MS. So it's move away from the words lie and truth. This is something else. For example, let's say somebody went to the store and bought something they can't return. So the Gemara says, you should say how beautiful it is. Are you supposed to say they're ugly? You're supposed to say they're beautiful. There's no point in making someone feel bad. They can't return the shoes. You could give another compliment. You could say they look really comfortable. But if you have no other choice but to say something that does not reflect reality and the person already needs to be built out from this, it's MS. That's what Hashem's will is. Rav Zusha of Anapoli, Rav Zusha of Anapoli commented, Midva Sheker Tirchak, distance yourself from Sheker. Interpret the verse to me, when you say Sheker, you become distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Words of Sheker make you distant. From who? One second, please. Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Words of Sheker make you distant from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So first of all, they build distance between man and fellow man, words of Sheker. And furthermore, they build distance between man and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it's quite an interesting unique way of looking at Emes and Sheker, but you see that with Sheker, you're over on these three laban. Midvar Sheker Tirchach, Lo Tirchach, Shu Yisba Amiso, Lo Sana Berecha, Eid Sheker. And we have to understand that sometimes, and I think we have to use our seichel and know when those times are, it doesn't mean go into the court of law and you should lie. Well, sometimes a person does need to bend or stretch the truth. We saw the Gemara, we took a Chumash, we quote Rashi, and Chumash Rashi, and the Gemara, in order to ensure that we do not come to harm another person with words of sheker. Yes?
I'm curious under which category this falls. I put up company once for people for Shabbos.
Say it again.
I put up company. I have a basement with three bedrooms. So I put up company for somebody in my basement, and I can't tell you how it was left. I put up company all the time. Never did I ever have a basement left like this. And somebody else said to me, oh, how did your company go? And I almost said, and I must have the credit of this class, I didn't. Don't even ask what that basement looked like. And I didn't. I just said Baruch Hashem. And I really said, and I had a fight with myself, I'm being honest. Because I would have loved to say,
isn't that a chizuk?
One of the kids made in the bed, there were wet diapers underneath the bed. I mean, really gross things. And I was annoyed. I'm being admitted, I was really, really annoyed. And my husband's saying to me, you put up company, this is what you expect. But it's not what you expect, you know? Bathroom overflow. I mean, it was really disgusting, and I was really annoyed. But I have to say, to the credit of the class, I did not say to this person everything that I was really annoyed about.
Call Kavod.
But really, I was saying the truth. It's like the Meraglim. I wasn't giving a fault. If I would have said something, because in my mind, this is what I was thinking, She asked me a question, I'm answering honestly. The basement was trashed.
But it would still fall into the category of, does Hashem want you to see that? Would it have accomplished anything? Obviously not.
No.
So Kol Kavod, you really passed the very big sign.
But I have to tell you, it's to your credit, because I kept thinking, no, I really made a conscious,
Baruch
also, Hashem. You just called me 10 minutes after I came from the basement.
Right.
And it was like,
wow. Kol Kavod. This school of mitzvahs.
Wow,
it's amazing. Okay, this whole class is worth it for that vineyard alone. Baruch Hashem. So we were just discussing this at the Shabbos table recently. It could be because it was just Mishpat, and we just had Midrash HaKa Tirchak. So my daughter said that she learned in school, one of the reasons you should not lie, we just learned, Rav Zushan Mianapoli says, Midrash HaKa Tirchak, it takes you far away from Hashem. We saw different sources. One of the reasons she said she learned in school, you shouldn't lie, is because it makes you into a dishonest person. You shouldn't become into the habit. You shouldn't come into the habit of becoming a dishonest person. Sometimes you feel it's necessary to lie, so it does something to your character, makes you into a different person. So interesting moment. She said that my husband said he heard something similar in a shir about hotels, staying in hotels. Like, taking things from the hotel room, the pens, the pad of paper. Apparently, some people take robes. I don't know. But
soap,
okay, shampoo. So the shear was, I don't remember who gave the shear, it was on the YU editor's homepage at Glassinger. I sent it to my husband because he does traveling for work. And he said that, so the shear talked about, can you take these things from the hotels? So it said, first of all, just out of interest, pens they want you to take. It's like advertising. The pens are meant to take. You could take the pens, you could take the paper. But one of the things that the Maggid shear said, again, I don't remember who the shear is, you shouldn't get into the habit of taking things that don't belong to you. Whether they want you to take or not, it makes you a person. It changes your personality. So it's not only relying, these meals are not only about the other person or the effect it has on somebody else. It's about also the effect it has upon you. Like my daughter said, Mivashacha Tirchak, it changes you into a liar. Taking, whether it's mutter or not mutter, makes you into a person who can become used to taking things that don't belong to you. And Moshe Feinstein's humility, that's all, did not prevent him from being firm and unyielding when necessary. As a genuine Torah personality, he would respond forcefully when he felt the situation required such a reaction. Once, when judging a din Torah, he caught someone offering testimony that was clearly false. And by the way, that's one of the things the Chofetz Chaim says. You have a call, she made edu sheker bevestim. Well, Rav Moshe caught someone offering testimony that was clearly false. Rav Moshe reprimanded the man and asked him to leave the room. While judging a dispute, Rav Moshe stated a halacha that was not to the liking of one of the parties involved. Second case. The first case, someone was saying falsehood, he told him to leave. It was not to let one of the parties involved. The man had the audacity to accuse Rav Moshe of falsifying the law so the case could be brought to a speedy conclusion. Rav Moshe rose to his full height and emphatically declared, "My name is Moshe Feinstein. True, I do not know how to learn, but go in the streets and ask if I am a liar." When a manuscript commentary, by the way, this next paragraph that I'm about to read is relevant to the next Nakuda we're going to read, okay? When a manuscript commentary to Chumash attributed to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, 12th century, was found to contain questionable statements, so again, you have an issue of this is MS or Sheker, according to the classic definition, Rav Moshe issued a tshuva condemning the publication and sale. To Rav Moshe, it was clear, even if Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wrote the bulk of the commentary, the statement in questions were written by heretics, in order to deceive loyal Jews of accepting these views, and therefore it should not be published. It was published despite his objections. Rav Moshe dispatched emissaries to Hebrew bookstores forbidding the sale of the Sefer. So this comes into should not read content that contains a sheker. Once again, it changes us as a personality. One second. Okay. Then here again, the context of really what Henny said, Emes is what Hashem wants to say, sheker is what Hashem doesn't want to say. Just one more interesting case. A woman once came to him, a widow once came to him, she wanted to violate halacha. She came insisting her husband had been buried in the wrong grave. She wanted to exhume his remains and rebury them elsewhere. So Rav Moshe dispatched someone to the cemetery to verify the claim. They could not reach a proper person. He explained to the widow it was forbidden to remove the remains until sometime later. In the meantime, they have to verify the fact. She came back again, and he told her sternly, "You will not change the halacha with tears after the third time." After the woman left, Rav Moshe turned to his Talmud and said, "One should not raise his voice, especially not to a person in pain, but sometimes it cannot be avoided, because that may be the only way to make them understand." So of course, it takes a gadol dar to know how to speak what and when to say what and the proper words to use. But there is something very strong to be said about the midah of sheker, not to change us, ourselves into a lying and deceitful person with words of deceit. Let's go on. And again, if someone gets all dressed and they come, this just happened to me actually very, very recently, and they come and you don't think that the shoes are the best match, just mom, it just happened to me, but they can't change your shoes and it's too late, and overall they look nice, you don't think the shoes match, so what are you going to say? Not talking about they don't look like a freak and they don't look like they're going to be run out of the room. It happens to be they could have done a little better. So what are you going to say? They don't match? Is that what you're going to say? So what's sheker and what's emes? You understand, it's a brilliant pshat. Objectively, what's emes and what's sheker? I don't know. Okay, so you have to keep in mind. Let's go. Any questions or comments? Okay. Dalet. Chanufa. Shemiyafe lo of lasav befanav. Chanufa is flattery. So shemiyaf is from yafeh, to make nice. So you make nice his evil behavior or his sins in his presence. The bracket says in English, in order to gain his favor. So you whitewash what a person's sins or errors, etc. You want to gain his favor. I don't know. Let's say, trying to think of an example, it's a very wealthy person and you have a tzedakah organization and you know that they can help your tzedakah organization, so you will whitewash their sins in order to gain their favor, so they'll donate. Actually, this is not a random example. I'm reading the Rabbi Meir Zlotowitz biography, Nazuchon Adrecha, if anybody else read it. Very fascinating biography, obviously a very fascinating personality who almost changed the world of Torah, literally. So he was very careful about who he accepted as donors to art school. I don't know, has anyone read the biography yet? Okay, so he was very careful. You couldn't just donate to art school and sponsor a volume or sponsor a set. He checked into his sponsors and he had to make sure they were Torah-dik and they were yasher, and he would not take someone who he did not feel upheld the values of art school. In fact, it tells a story about Rabbi Billet. Why? Because there was someone in Woodmere who wanted to sponsor, I don't know, some set of Svaram. So he called art school and he spoke briefly to Rabbi Zlotowitz, but Rabbi Zlotowitz was very non-committal. Am I saying the word right? Non-committal. So the next day, coming out of shul, this is what it says in the biography, Rabbi Billet, and names the person, by the way, I don't remember the person's name, met this mespala, I guess the youngest woman. He said, "Oh, I had a call about you. Rabbi Zlotowitz was calling to check up on you." Just like we called for Shaduchim, he was calling for references. He was very careful. He would never flatter somebody. In other words, this is flatter. You give somebody a kavod, which are undeserving because it has a benefit to you. He would never do that. He felt it was a schus to sponsor art school. And if you didn't get the schus, somebody else was going to get the schus, but he would not change at all or alter the principles of Torah to flatter somebody just to get money. In fact, the exact opposite. He would check into you, like checking into a shidduch. It's the stories in the biography. Quotes Rabbi Billet and the Mispala. Billet says to Mispala, "I just got a phone call about you from art school, checking into you." Chanufa shemiyafalo avlaso bifanav in English, in order to gain favor. So it's not flattery to your child. And it's not flattery to your grandchild. It's not flattery to your sister and your spouse. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about when it's like the example given in art school, a person is a Ghana, for example. So in that case, Rabbi Zlotowitz, if he, to the best of his knowledge, would have nothing to do with them. He would not flatter that, but to have something to do with them, he would have nothing to do with them. Hani Machas, when she would come home, I didn't think about it before, so I don't know what page it's on. I don't think I'm going to be able to find it. But she, oh my gosh, talk about Shkacha Pratis. That's insane. Don't you love when you see Yad Hashem so clearly? Okay, that's crazy. My mother would go to parent-teacher meetings, Elishava, and she didn't get the best reports about me. This relates both to Chanufa and Sheker. But she would come back and she would say, "You're so smart, you're so intelligent, you're the best girl in the whole world." So that relates to both Sheker, what Hashem wants you to say. Sheker is what Hashem doesn't want you to say. Emes is what Hashem wants you to say. And second of all, Chanufa, we're not talking about building up your child. Yes, of course, there has to be a place for Chinuch, but you have to know how to talk to the child as well. She wanted us to have a good feeling about ourselves. So this is hysterical. I remember when I read, I told my husband, instead of telling us what the teacher said about us, she just gave us her own report. And she often told us the teachers are mistaken. Now we know Henny was in a class by herself, yes. And then she would add, "But you know what? It could be she has a little point." She's wrong to be down on you. She has her own pains, her own hardship, but it could be she has a little point. So Chanufa is when it is inappropriate. We're not talking about vis-a-vis your children who need to be built up with self-confidence. Kemo dechsiv, as the pasuk says, it's a pasuk from Bamidbar. Velo tachnifu as ha'art. Shehu ledas har be'rishonim lav gamar. According to many Rishonim, this is an absolute lav. Ayin b'chavetz chaim b'psicha. You should see the chavetz chaim in the psicha. So let me tell you what the pasuk actually is. What time is it? Let me tell you what the pasuk actually is, please. What we're talking about, it's in Parshas Maasai, and what we're talking about is a murderer, okay? Before this pasuk, you're talking about a murderer. A murderer kills Beshogeg, has to run to the Eir Miklat, the city of refuge, until the Kohen Gadol of his time dies. A murderer himself cannot pay to go to Eir Miklat. Somebody killed the Mazid, and with warning, and with witnesses, he has to go to Beis Din, and he has to suffer the consequences. Do not, lo tichu kofer lenefesh rotzecha, shehu rashal amus, kimos yimas. Do not take bribery from a murderer. In other words, he wants to bribe you, so he should go to where? The Eir Miklat. The Eir Miklat wasn't so bad. The Kohen Gadol's mother used to bring him money. The Rebbe used to be exiled with him. It was a city. He was killed by Shogeg. So he, instead of wanting to have to face the death penalty, he wants to pay you off. He wants to bribe you. What will he do? Go to the Eir Miklat. It's okay. He could go to the Eir Miklat. You're not allowed to take that money. Lo tichu kofer lanus el Eir Miklato. You cannot take kofer nefesh. You cannot take payment. So he could run. Lashuv la'ashavis b'aretz al moskon. He wants to just sit until the Kohen Gadol dies. V'lo sachnifu es ha'aretz asher atem bam. Do not. So what does Unkla say? V'lo sichayivun yasara. What does that mean? You should not make the earth chayav. Chayav. Rashi says, V'lo tarshiu. You should not make the earth wicked. You should not bring wickedness or chova upon the land. How would you make us chayav upon the land? By changing the din. By accepting bribery. By not killing the murderer. By not sending someone to the Eir Miklat. You are velo sechayvun yas ara di atunba. You should not make the land chayv, says Rashi. Lo tarshiu from Masha. Should not make the land wicked, so to speak. Ki adam hu yachni v'sar. It's because the blood will make the land wicked. V'l'arz lo yuchpar l'adam asher shufach ba. The land will not have atonement through blood that was spilled in it. Ki im badam shavchob. Only through the blood of he who spilled the blood. So the one who spilled the blood has to pay back. Adam manina. Provision of justice. Lo tachniv v'sar'z. However, Chazal learned from here in the Chavetz Chaim quote that it also includes Chanifa with words, which is very interesting. Why is this so interesting? What are we talking about? I gave you the background. I told you the Pesukim are talking about. What are we talking about? Murder, killing. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Pesukim are talking about different instances of murder. Somebody who killed somebody else, whether it was Beshogu, whether it was Bemezid, he killed. Now we come to the pasuk that says, do not pervert the land, do not bring corruption and chova upon the land. Do not make the land wicked, says Rashi. We saw what Uncle says. Why is that so interesting? We're talking about murder. Chazal learned out, and the Chavetz Chaim brings it down, that you should not flatter somebody with words inappropriately. So what does that teach you? The pshat is talking about murder. The drash is talking about the power of words. What does it teach you?
It can lead to murder.
That abuse and misuse of your words is akin to
murder.
We learn about the love of Chanifa. We learn about the love of Chanifa vis-a-vis inappropriate flattery of a rasha from laws about the pshat of murder. So what is a reinforced idea? We've discussed it before. Speaking inappropriately is akin to murder. We spoke a few classes ago about Habanas Panim. Is everyone with me? It's a very, very strong, very, very stark and harsh reminder of the power of our words. Ki adam hu yachim, says Yechizkuni, l'kach ani mazhirchem al-kach. Therefore, I warn you about the sharei rotzchim, murderers, shehem anshei damim, who are men of blood, min hagam lahachnif as yoshvei v'aretz, kedei sheyachnifu aleim. It is their way to persuade or to sway or to flatter the inhabitants of the land, so the inhabitants of the land should be swayed and persuaded by them and flatter them back. What did the Chizkuni just say? You have to be very careful about this, because murderers who are men of blood are very suave, are very sly, are very smooth-talking people. They're going to try and sway you with their words so that in the end you will be swayed and you will flatter them with words. In other words, in the end they'll get off. So you see that murderers also have a special koach, which i.e. someone who sins, who either kills somebody literally or with words, kill somebody proverbially. Lo sachnifu asa aretz, Rabbeinu Bechaya, ha'oser ra b'seser. one who does bad, Baseser. What's Baseser? In a hidden realm, in a quiet realm, things nobody can see, Yikare Chanef is called one who is a flatterer. So here we also have the idea that someone who does the bad, thinking no one can see them. And isn't that true about our speech? Isn't it true that when we speak negatively, when we speak Sheker, when we speak Chanufa, when we speak Rechilis, when we speak Lashonar, what do we think? Nobody could see me. If I really thought that Hashem could see me, I wouldn't be saying those words. Because I think I'm in private. No one sees. No one sees how I'm answering that person. How were your guests? Oh, it's just between me and her. Why can't I just say that my basement was trash? No one sees me. But Baruch Hashem, you have to serve Hashem with both your yetzers, and you pass a very unbelievable test. It's a very inspiring test, because one who is Baseser thinks nobody sees except the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's absolutely not true. So Rashi says, Lo sar shiyu, don't make the earth wicked. Targumunklus, lo sechayivu, don't bring chova upon them. And the Chizkuni, they will have a way with their words, murderous people of blood, so that in the end, you'll be convinced by their words of flattery. You'll end up flattering them. And finally, Rabbeinu Bechaya, Ha'osar Rabba Seser. Don't think when you're in Seser that no one's going to find you, because ultimately, who's going to find you? The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to find you. All of that applies both to murder as well as to murder with words. The Rav Shem Sharfal Hirsch says, any questions or comments? No? Okay. Chanef, so Rav Shem Sharfal Hirsch focuses very much on Shorashim. Chanef clearly denotes the hypocrite. A hypocrite. Why would it be hypocritical? Let's say he didn't do it, but now that we explain the Rav Meir's a lot of it, it fits into his purposely. Who is translating texts of Torah to make Torah accessible? This Mikros Kadosh. I just quoted from his art school. This Gemara's art school. Kerev Hirsch is Feldheim. But why would it be hypocritical for Rabbi Zlotowitz to be translating Torah texts and then to take money from criminals? It's clear why. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you're taking mitzvah ba'ba veira. You're taking money from a thief in order to promote Torah. So that's a great example. Chanufa, chanef, clearly denotes the hypocrite who outwardly presents an appearance that is different from and better than his inner essence. So one who is mechanef, a rasha, is a hypocrite because he pretends to be a tzaddik, he pretends to be righteous, he pretends to be holier than thou. However, what is he doing? He's not really doing the right thing. That's one who turns another into hypocrite, removes, doesn't matter, the inner, other's inner core while leaving his outer appearance unchanged. So it's hypocritical to flatter someone. Now, we're not talking about you think that the person, by the way, please, we're not talking about you think the person's a tzaddik and it's unbeknownst to you that they're a rasha or a thief. We're talking about if you know that this person does not deserve flattery. Extreme example, mamish extreme example, I don't know if it ever happened. Someone who's known to be dishonest in business, no, mamish, and he's honored a school dinner. Again, I have no idea if it ever happened. I have no shaykhis, I'm not no gay, but I'm just pointing out another example. Someone's known to be a dishonest person. It perhaps has happened in the history of school dinners that such a person was honored at a dinner. That's Pasha Khanifa. I'm not talking about nobody knows. I'm talking about there's questions and we know. So what are we doing? We're honoring them. We're giving honor. We're giving cover. It's clearly Khanifa in the speeches and the videos and what we presented in order to solicit more money to build our Malcolm Torah. But that person's a love. It's totally usher. That, says Rav Hirsch, what's the difference of Khanif? A hypocrite. Unbelievable. If you tolerate deliberate murder and careless manslaughter in your midst, because remember I told you what the preceding psukim are talking about, we're talking about murder, you turn the land asher atembam, in which you are, in which your earthly existence is rooted, the land which you should regard as your most precious product, of course we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, into a hypocrite. The land will disappoint the expectations you would otherwise be justified in placing in it, so you can actually change the nature of Eretz Yisrael. When we become hypocritical in our treatment of others, the land becomes hypocritical to us. It will withhold the blessing that was meant to emanate from it. When we inappropriately bless and flatter those who are not worthy of blessing and flatter, so mida kanega mida, the land will be inappropriate towards us. Instead of yielding blessing to us, it will withhold blessing from us. Blood, human blood, is the most precious sap nurtured by the land. Innocent human blood turns the land into a hypocrite. It's so powerful that from this lav. When we're talking about murders, do we learn about the power of speech? Think how you have felt if you have had an embarrassing comment made to you, or Rahman al-Tan, if you're the person who made an embarrassing comment towards somebody else. Now, when you see the other person's reaction, you realize that it is mamish akin to murder. Murder. Man in his moral freedom is meant to be close to God. We're going through Vayikra and the Karbanos. The ultimate purpose of all earthly forces and development. A human society that does not regard the blood of its members as sacred unto God. It was a terrible attack. Our society certainly does not regard the blood of its members sacred to God. The attack last week in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. It was live streaming the massacre. Is that a new level? What kind of sick society is this? There was an attack yesterday, I'm sure that you saw, in Eretz Yisrael. Gal Kedar, 19-year-old soldier, was killed. 47-year-old father of 12 is in critical condition. A rabbi, the doctors are fighting for his life. Another soldier is wounded and in serious condition. A human society that does not regard the blood of each of its members as sacred. A society that does not demand a reckoning for innocent blood spilled. We certainly live, unfortunately, in such a society. Such a society breaks the term under which it may possess the land. So the land pays us back in turn. We did not live up to our expectation by appreciating the blood of humanity, the most precious sap. The land withholds itself from us. Such a society becomes a hypocrite towards the land, and it turns the land into a hypocrite towards society. The survival of a deliberate murder is an affront to the higher dignity of man, a breach of contract under which God gave the earth to man and the land of Israel. And this is certainly true in regard to Koach HaDibur. If we are killing people with our words, so what happened? The land kicked us out. That's the ultimate breach of the land against us. Land kicked us out. We haven't been back ever since. I'll be a skol tzedek. We haven't had tranquility and we don't have geula. Obviously, we don't have geula and the land kicked us out. Why? Because with our charvosha b'lishonam, we murdered, so the land became hypocritical against us. That's chanufa. Okay, so we did sheker and chanufa. Leitzonis is unbelievable. Also, unbelievable quote from Avshan Sharaf Al-Hirsch on Leitzonis in Tehillim, but we're going to go to this now. Any questions or comments? No one has anything to say today? Okay, just me. Okay. It's interesting, by the way. I just thought of something. You know, when I was preparing Shira, I was thinking about Esther. But now I think I just had a resolution to my own question. I was thinking about Esther because of her Koach HaDibur. But Esther Lohi Gid, she would not tell her Muladata Ava Esama Kasher Tzivala Mordechai. So was she lying? Was she withholding a truth? According to Henny, what was she saying? Emes or Sheker? According to Henny, she was actually saying Emes. She was saying what Hashem wants you to say. Mordechai knew at this time it was not appropriate. Even though silence, we saw it in the Gemara, according to Tosfos, so silence can sometimes be shtika koda. It's an admission to lying. In that case, it was necessary for her to hold her tongue because why? Mordechai knew, Mordechai was a gadodar. Mordechai knew this was not the time to speak. So if you follow Das Torah and you hold your tongue, even though it seems like lying, it was actually for the benefit of her people. In the right time, she pled and she said, me and my nation, in Karnu, Aniva Ami. The commandment, Hocheach Tochiach Asamitacha, you shall repeat yourself, Vayikra, Perikites, Precious Kedoshim, requires a Jew to inform a sinner his behavior is improper and attempt to convince him to mend his ways. So this is very common. If you see someone. I was just at, it's not a chasram, an insult, it's not a shenhar, it's an example of this. We were just 2 weeks ago at my brother's house for Shabbos lunch, and on the buffet where the drinks were, there were some cans of soda. So I said to my brother, again, it's my brother, I know he wants to, I said, you open cans on Shabbos? So he said, no, the housekeeper put them out there. They don't, in other words, that was a case where you would want to tell somebody and you know that they would want to mend. I'm just using this as an example, but there's many cases of this. If you see someone who you know wants to improve and you know that they're doing something by mistake. In this case, he didn't even put them out. We weren't supposed to be there in the first place. They took them away. But my point is that if you know that there's someone's behavior is improper and you can convince them to mend their ways, then, and you know that it will accomplish something, so it is a mitzvah to tell that person they're doing something wrong. In voicing his disapproval, one must be prepared to endure embarrassment and insult. Because what's going to happen immediately? What's the response? Usually, a person could become very defensive and should continue to voice his disapproval so long as the forbidden act is being repeated. Even if one sees little or no chance that his words will be heeded, he must nevertheless continue to protest. That's very interesting. But isn't that a problem then? Because maybe before it was b'shogeg, unknowingly, and now you're making mutav shu shogegin v'lo mezeidin? I'm just putting that out there. I don't know. Like, if a person didn't know, right? So they managed to know, and you don't think they're going to listen to you. So isn't it better to not say anything?
Well, there are people that say that it's better not to say anything.
That's what I'm saying. We just read, even once he's little and no chance his words will be heeded, he must nevertheless continue to protest. Only in a case where he knows his reproof would cause a sinner to react by committing more serious, like, oh, you think that's bad? You think I'm opening cans on Shabbos? I'm going to drive to the store to buy the cans, open them on Shabbos. Then you should refrain from speaking if you know it will lead to more serious offense. Reproof, however, must be administered with respect and understanding and should be done in private whenever possible. Generally speaking, one is required to interrupt and reprove the speaker of lashon hara. This is very interesting. It just came up in a shir last week. Not this year, but if you're sitting at a table and people are speaking lashon hara, it's not so easy to just get up. Mm-hmm. So I said, so say you have to check your phone. I said, seriously, say you have a phone call, say you have a text, you must take this call. They said, what if it's Shabbos? I said, oh. Thank you. Generally speaking, one is required to interrupt and reprove the speaker of lashon hara to his best to ensure he put a halt to sinful speech. As mentioned, this does not apply when the speaker would likely react by expressing greater negativity towards the person. So in other words, clearly, if you're going to make it worse, then hocheyach to hocheyach means you should refrain. So sometimes you also know the person, like I said. Like I know I could say my brother used cans on Shabbos and there was going to be no insult. Either he was going to tell me why he used cans on Shabbos or he was going to say no, or maybe they forgot, whatever. But if you know that it's going to make it even worse and there's a way for him to defend his sinful talk or behavior and exacerbate the situation, then you should not say anything. So The Gemara says, in our day, there's no one who knows how to give proper tochacha. So we, in general, I think we need to be very careful of this mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Very often, a person will be seen as holier than thou. You know, oh, you think you're so religious? I remember when you did X, Y, and Z. You're giving me tochacha? Mm-hmm. Work on yourself before you tell me what to work on. So the person does have to be careful. Furthermore, why the double lashon? Hocheach tochiach asa misacha. Hocheach, first give yourself rebuke. When you feel you've done a good enough job, then tochiach. Another situation where reproof would be out of place is where? The speaker does not realize the information he's conveying is lashon hara. He's totally unaware that lashon hara is prohibited by Torah, and it's obvious the speaker will continue speaking lashon hara even after told it's forbidden. So I don't know how that would be such a case. A person does not know it's lashon hara at all. Okay. In such a case, reproof would transform the speaker. Oh, from an inadvertent sinner into one who sins intentionally. That's what we just said before. So if for some reason the person, maybe not even with lashon hara, the person's doing a sin unknowingly, and you point it out to them, and you know they're going to continue, so now you actually made it worse. It's better not to reprove. This is what we said before. Why is it better not to reprove? Because now you're going to make him an intentional sinner. At least before he was an inadvertent, unintentional sinner. Now you're going to make him intentional. We have seen that one must reprove two more minutes. One must reprove the speaker of lashon hara, even if it's highly unlikely the reproof will be effective. When several people are involved, this is so common, in a discussion that includes lashon hara, one must speak up. And you're not going to be seen in the best light. And they're not going to appreciate what you're saying. And caution them that what they're discussing is forbidden. However, unlike the case of an individual speaks lashon hara, if the people ignore the reproof, one should not persist in his rebuke if it's a group. Unless he feels his words might ultimately achieve a positive result, if in an unreceptive group setting, it is wise to refrain from excessive reproof. Why? Because what could happen? They're going to feed off of each other. If everybody says, you're so far from, then what are you talking about? And what's the big deal? And we're not really saying anything bad. What's going to happen is, in that case, we'll probably almost always make it worse. They'll feed off each other. An exception to this rule is when one finds himself in a community where their prohibition of lashon hara has been disregarded. Remember, Chafetz Chaim says about lashon hara, what does he call it? Who remembers? A meis mitzvah. Lashon hara, specifically shmir salashon. The category of shmir salashon says Chafetz Chaim is a meis mitzvah. What does it mean? it's totally a dead mitzvah. It's a play on words. People have totally disregarded this. Widespread disregard calls for more than ordinary reproof. It demands persistent protest. One must call for an awareness of the severity of speaking Lashon Hara and knowledge of what constitutes Lashon Hara. So in a community where people are not interested, and you know that people disregard their mitzvah, so in any way possible, you should try to bring an awareness of the laws of Shmir Salashon to the forefront to help people in that community improve their speech. Questions or comments? Okay, Basura's talking.